Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, the King of Swing, Rick Hess.
Mike, I just want to say you are a good-looking man.
Well, Rick, that is quite a way to start the show. Thank you. Well, too. Is that a new shirt you're wearing?
It's very much in that kind of Petrilli mold. Yes. I feel okay about it, but you're here in your white sweater over a button-down shirt with some of those fancy Brooks Brothers pants.
That's right.
Dude, you look like you're stepped right out of one of those ads for Jordangers or something.
That's right. Well, you know, policy wonks need to look good these days, you know?
That's an interesting point.
Okay. Well, Rick, you know, I want to start out with a shout-out to our friends at the Paul Cuffey School, which is a charter school in Providence, Rhode Island. They are fans of the show. Now, you taught high school history, Rick, right? Do you know who Paul Cuffey was?
I think I do. I'm going to put my money on the fact that he was the guy who invented the Mr. Coffee machine.
Oh, no, that is wrong. It would be called the Mr. Cuffey machine. Very good. Nice try. No, he was born in the late 1700s. His father was a slave and his mother was a Native American, and he went on to become a wealthy ship captain. Now, when his own children were barred from the local school because of their mixed race, he started a school for children from all ethnicities. What a great namesake, huh?
Sounds good.
All right.
To hear from the fans out there.
It is good to hear from the fans. We'd like to hear from you, too. Okay, now, let's jump right in, shall we, Rick? We're going to start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly, where we debate three of the hot issues of the week. Then we'll have an interview with our good friend and Uber wonk, Tom Lovelace. And finally, our colleague Jennifer will serve up a shot of News of the Weird. Sound good?
Works for me.
All right, man. Let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Here's our first topic. California judge this week struck down the state's requirement that all graduating seniors pass the California High School Exit Exam in order to receive a diploma. Now, is this ruling good news for the 46,000 12th graders who couldn't pass this middle school level test?
Well, it is if they want a worthless piece of paper to hang on their wall.
And who doesn't want that?
Hey, it's decorative. Otherwise, you got to invest in wallpaper, you got to buy paintings. Look, I mean, the judge basically said everybody who can show up and get teachers to not fail them out of high school is entitled to getting a diploma. I'm not sure why the judge thinks this is doing these kids or kids in years to come any particular favors.
All right, fair enough. But let's look at it from the student's perspective, right? 46,000 of them. Now, they are probably attending horrible public schools in urban districts especially, or other places in the city, in the state, most likely getting a shoddy education. Probably, you know, don't have teachers who know their subjects, or maybe the teachers are always long-term subs. They don't have textbooks. They don't have materials. They don't even have the coursework that's required at this middle school level to pass the test. I mean, you can understand from their perspective, they say, look, this isn't fair. You know, if you're not going to give me a good education, it's not fair to deny me a diploma.
Right. If you're not going to give me a good education, at least give me a worthless piece of paper.
Well, that's right.
So that I can go into college where I can fail out and waste money in remediation, or I can go to a job that I'm unsuited for.
Right.
I mean, ultimately, you know, what we're dealing here is because we're not educating these kids, we've got a horrible choice. Either we've got to say to these kids that you're 18 years old, you've been in school for 12 years, we haven't done anything for you, and now we're going to cut you loose and let you make your way without any education to take, you know, to provide you with basic skills. Or we're not going to let them graduate, not going to issue them a diploma, but then we got to make sure we're actually providing them the service and education they need.
All right
now, we don't want to do either, and so we've got a bunch of judges coming in and handing out worthless paper.
All right, but isn't the theory of action here that this high school graduation requirement was supposed to provide incentives to school districts? Oh,
I think that felt like a quick buzz.
Listen to that buzzer.
That was quick, and that was mean. That's all I'm saying.
That was tough. You know, we are experimenting with a new buzzer system this week.
I like that. And, you know, you're right. You know, you're supposed to have incentives, but the fact is, and that stuff may be working, but we're going to have kids with no skills for years to come. What are we going to do with them?
The buzzer has spoken.
I hate the buzzer, baby. Cramps our style. All right. Topic two, Michael. A new survey out of Florida shows that teachers in the Tampa Bay area are disgruntled. They say things like, I don't like my school very much. I'm tired of working there. And approximately half of these teachers would leave the profession if they could. Mike, who is to blame when the teachers got the blues?
Wow, Rick, first of all, that teacher impersonation of yours was very special. I want you to know. Well, who is to blame? You know, look, you got to feel for these teachers, right? I mean, here they come into a system that's dysfunctional. You know, lots of the good teachers leave after a couple of years. The teachers that stay get treated poorly. They've got no say over their work. They've got to work through 87 layers of bureaucracy in order to try to change anything. I mean, this is a maddening job, you know? The question for me is, why aren't school systems more upset about this? I mean, the superintendent in the paper when this came out basically acted nonchalant about it. You know, look, why don't they look to charter schools where teachers are given a lot more authority, are empowered to make decisions, be professionals, instead of just doing the same old, treating these teachers like they're widgets?
I mean, you raise good points. One question, of course, is how many folks in any place of work are going to say, I love my job, I never want to do anything else, if surveyed?
Rick, so. I love my job. I never want to do anything else.
Well, of course you do. As your wife has said, it's not a real job.
Yeah, I know. That's right. I mean, I get to do podcasts and write, you know, silly editorials.
You sit around and pontificate at people who are doing the hard work
it's
out
a great
there
job,
teaching kids.
I got to say. Teachers out there, this is a good life if you can get the education policy.
Which is why they want out of their schools,
yes,
because they're actually doing hard, real work.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right that we've created schools which are deadening, hostile environments to people who are trying to do good, imaginative, effective work. And that's a real problem. The other problem, though, is we've made it real hard for teachers to leave when they feel burnt out. Right now, most state retirement systems, including Florida's, require that you really put in 20, 25 years before you're fully vested. Unlike a 401k, this means that if you've been doing this 12, 15 years and you're ready for change, you're paying a huge price to walk away. Now, that's a recipe for keeping people in the classroom beyond the time when they're doing their best work.
Well, let's bring it down to personal history, Rick. Why did you leave the classroom?
Because I got frustrated as all get out with a system which didn't feel real receptive of my best effort. So, you know,
I
like that. And the other reason was because I wanted to see the Orient.
Okay.
And now I feel like I've been there.
All right. Very nice. Okay, Rick. Well, our final topic of the week, a high price for getting high. There's a new debate around a provision in the Higher Education Act that bars federal student aid, like loans and Pell Grants, from going to any student with a drug conviction. Now, Rick, is this a reasonable incentive for good behavior, or is Congress smoking something?
I got to go with option B there, big guy. I mean, can you get arrested for speeding or reckless driving and still get federal loans? I believe the answer is yes. In fact, I believe there's various felonious convictions you can get and still be eligible for federal aid. And so I'm not quite sure why we're picking on people who want to engage in a bit of recreational activity while they play Xbox rather than go out and play tennis. This, you know, as long as they're getting their work done and as long as they're kind of punching the grades, what the heck?
You know, I'm concerned with your moral relativism here, Rick. You know, we don't want college students spending their time smoking pot instead of studying, right? And we, the taxpayers, are paying for their education.
But we don't want them drinking instead of studying, presumably. But I don't see us threatening to take away their aid, even if they drink underage.
Even if they drink underage. Okay, so what you would do then is actually expand this provision.
Absolutely. I think if you get a traffic ticket, no federal loans. And if you're a fat kid, if you're spending all those monies on Hostess Twinkies and, you know, chicken parmesan subs, because that's money that, you know, otherwise a kid could put towards tuition. So they clearly don't need loans if they can afford a lot of food. So to my mind, if Congress is really going to get on the ball here, let's get serious about policing the morals of young Americans.
All right. So if you're fat and a pothead, you got no chance at a college education. Is that what you're saying, Rick?
Well, you certainly shouldn't be funded on the public's dime, it sounds like Congress thinks.
All right.
But in fact, how many fat potheads have you known who did well in college? They were creative. They slept well at night. What the heck?
All right. But seriously, look, I mean, this is going to hurt low-income kids the most, right? Because they're the ones that rely on federal student aid to go to college in the first place. They're the ones that don't have fancy lawyers to try to get them out of this mess, you know, if they get busted, right? So, I mean, this is just one more classist way to keep poor kids out of college.
And presumably to kind of reduce demand for weed, keeping prices down for the rich kids.
Keeping prices down. What just got flushed down the toilet, Rick?
That's what I'm thinking about.
Okay,
some
well.
Some unhappy sophomore out there.
Now, Rick, did you like our buzzers? We had the buzzer, we had the gong, we had the toilet flushing.
I liked the gong. It made me feel like we were on the road a bit.
Yeah, I like that. It had a little special something. Well, that is it for Pardon the Gadfly. It is now time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our very special and very weird correspondent, Jennifer Leischer. Jen, what is weird this week?
All right, guys. Michael Maxwell, a high school teacher in St. Joseph, Missouri, was suspended from work this week after asking his class to write an essay about whom they would most like to murder and how they'd do it. Sounds like a somewhat inappropriate creative writing project for high schoolers, right? But here's where it gets really weird. Maxwell is an industrial technology teacher, the class formerly known as SHOP, and he gave the writing assignment to his drafting class. Sadly, news reports didn't elaborate on how the students' essays turned out, though we can't get scenes from Halloween out of our minds. My guess for most popular response? Paris Hilton with a candlestick in the kitchen. Rick, who would you murder and how would you do it?
Oh, that's a good question. And in fact, I think that makes for a provocative school essay. I'm not sure why, on the one hand, we're frustrated that Tampa teachers aren't enthusiastic about their work, and on the other hand, we've got a SHOP teacher trying to bring literacy into the SHOP, into the vocational curriculum, and all we're doing is saying kids shouldn't be writing about murder. That's just me. I think Paris certainly ought to be up there. I think a good number two might be that Osama cat. Yeah. You know, he's problematic. Okay. And I think maybe with one of those kind of little gutter knives, the kinds that fold out of your Swiss Army and you get them right in the belly button and the cheek, okay. And you go, and you go
that's it. Okay, stop, Rick. No, hold on. I mean,
I'm just saying.
Come on. This teacher must have been smoking something, right? And he's going to get to keep his job, and then college kids who smoke a little something get out of college.
But I bet he's enthusiastic about his work.
Well, that may be true. All right, well, finally this week, we are going to go to our interview with Dr. Tom Lovelace of the Brookings Institute.
Another man who's enthusiastic about his work.
He is enthusiastic about his work. That's right. Now, Tom Lovelace, you know, everybody loves Tom Lovelace. He's everyone's favorite policy wonk. And he was one of 17 individuals named to the National Mathematics Panel this week. Let's find out what that is all about. Welcome, Tom. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, first of all, Tom, we noticed that the National Mathematics Panel has 17 members. Now, 17 is a prime number, divisible by no other. Is this a coincidence, something out of the Da Vinci Code, or some kind of signal to the mathematics community?
I have no idea. Absolutely no idea.
All right, well, seriously, it looks like both camps of the math wars are included on the panel. So is this effort meant to lead to a truce?
Well, you know, the math wars have been pretty quiet anyway over the last 3 or 4 years. Most of the people on this panel have worked together on other panels. And I think even though you have a lot of different points of view represented on the panel, these are people who aren't flamethrowers. They're used to looking for common ground. Common ground can be found, so I don't think the math wars are going to have a big impact on what the panel does. Now, can the panel sort of contribute towards solving the math wars? That remains to be seen. I don't know.
All right. Well, now, the panel's assignment, according to the press release, is to, quote, examine and summarize the scientific evidence related to the teaching and learning of mathematics with a special focus on preparation for and success in learning algebra. But the question is there any scientific evidence related to teaching and learning of mathematics like we had in reading?
There certainly is not as much as there is in reading, and I think everybody recognizes that. But there's more than nothing. There is something out there. There is some science in terms of teaching and math. We know some things. I actually don't want to get into now what I think those things are. I want to look at the evidence. We're gonna all be considering the evidence together at the same time. And there is some, but yeah, there's not as much as reading. And you know, another one of the tasks the commission is supposed, the panel is supposed to accomplish, is to identify research needs. And my guess is there's going to be a lot of that. You know, we're going to identify the important questions that need to be asked with further research.
Okay, very good. Well, one last question, Tom. Just to make sure you are qualified to serve on this panel, quickly, what's 543 times 627?
I have no idea.
Ah, Tom, you're letting us all down. But you know what? You are still America's favorite education policy wonk, nonetheless.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for joining the show. Hope you'll come back.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. You know, Rick, Tom getting named to this prestigious panel is just one more knock against the rest of us policy wonks, isn't it?
I think so. But I think we play our cards right, Mike. We can make this work for us. There are 16 more members on that panel. I think we've got 4 months of guests lined up, baby.
I like that. I like that. You know, I personally am gunning for the National History panel myself. Don't you think that's something you're a historical kind of guy. I'm a historical guy. I was a history teacher long, long time ago. Why not?
I think that's a sensible match for you.
Yeah, the only problem is Tom actually knows something about math, although he did not get that multiplication table problem right, whereas I don't actually know a whole lot about history.
Well, the history's easier to fake. I think that's the nice thing.
Well, that is true. All right, well, fortunately, that is all the time we have for this week. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.